Guardian Unlimited.
Gotterdammerung. I'm Paul McInnes, and this is Music Weekly from Guardian Unlimited. Now, some of you may have noticed that we've been off for a couple of weeks, just a couple of weeks. But we're back, we're revived, we're refreshed, we're full of verve and full of zest. So, let us begin. Coming up on this week's show, we talk soundtracks, old rave, new rave, plus life after orbital with our very special guest, Paul Hartnell. We pick over the bones of this year's Mercury shortlist. Plus, New York rhymer Faro Monge tells us about his desire to raid his musical roots on his latest album. And there's new music from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Jacob and Arena, and Groove Armada. Hold tight and look sharp. This is Music Weekly from Guardian Unlimited. So yes, we are back for what could well be our tricky second album. The lineup, however, remains the same. First up, Guardian Unlimited music writer Rosalina Swash.
Hello.
Hello. And welcome back to Music Weekly producer Benjamino Delgarino.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon. But it's simply fantastic to hear the both of you back in here again. But not quite as fantastic as this. That, as many of you probably won't need telling, is Halcyon and On by Orbital, one of the most influential and successful dance acts of the 90s. But our special guest this week is Paul Hartnell, who made up one half of the band with his brother Phil, spearheading Britain's techno scene and helping to root it in the mainstream. Orbital said goodbye to the world almost exactly 3 years ago, and their farewell set at Glastonbury 2004 still has people talking. Since then, Paul's been busy remixing and writing, and early this summer, he released his debut solo album, Ideal Conditions. Paul Hartnell, welcome to the pod.
Hello.
I hope that was a fair and accurate introduction.
Perfect, yeah.
Perfect.
I couldn't have put it better myself.
Yeah, well, exactly. We exist to big people up. How is life as a solo artist?
It's good fun. Yeah, I've been really enjoying myself, you know.
What's the biggest change from when you've no longer got your, your brother and two, your sidekick, I suppose?
I guess it's that constant looking over your shoulder and saying, what do you think of that? There's no one there anymore,
do you know
what I mean? So you're sort of left to your own devices, which, you know, it could be good or bad, but that's the fun. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to change the way I was working, really.
I mean, this is quite apparent when you listen to the album, because it's such an intriguing mixture. It's not purely electronic, but it's not purely acoustic either. It's also a mixture of several different genres too. And how would you describe this mix, and how did you set about making it?
It really is a blend of all the things that I love, you know, and anything that I fancied doing. You know, I was sort of free from the constraints of any kind of record company working with any one particular person, although I worked with lots of people on the record, but it was, you know, for individual little jobs. Nobody else was seeing the whole picture at any one time. It was just really good fun to just sort of let my hair down and just start exploring, just start doing stuff. I didn't even know I was really writing an album when I started. I just started writing music, but, you know, because I thought, well, what should I do now? And then it started becoming apparent that an album and a pattern was forming, you know, albeit sort of from quite different sources. And, you know, like you say, from the sort of big orchestral sounds that I love of listening to things like Danny Elfman and Ennio Morricone, right back to sort of everything that I loved about Orbital with Patchwork Guilt and just totally electronic electro sort of track, Made in a Day, you know. And it sort of, it just really was everything that I love. And with this album, because it was a lot of real musicians, a lot of the time was spent sort of idle waiting for people to come in, or waiting to get the orchestra in to do stuff. So even though it was a long time, I did focus on not losing that. And what I find is, if you keep fiddling with tracks, they're the ones that didn't make it to the album. There's something not quite right, and you keep fiddling, and you think, actually, I've been fiddling with this on and off for 6 months. Why don't I just start again, just get rid of that and just do something new? And that's what I tended to do with this record.
How did you come about choosing the artist that you did work with? So, like Robert Smith, for example, are you mates with him, or is it just something you thought, I want one of the avatars of the goth music of the 80s to come in and sing on this track?
Well, that's a good reason in itself. But no, I mean, literally, I'd met him after a festival in Sweden once, sat around a fire afterwards, and he seemed like a really nice bloke. And I, ever since that point, I thought, God, he'd be a great person to ask to sing on a track. And the opportunity never really arose until then, when I had that particular track, and I just thought. Because whenever I need a vocal on the track, it's sort of I get to a point where I think I really like this, but there's something missing that I can't do. And it's like, ah, well, that's a vocal, because I don't sing, yeah. You know, I don't write lyrics. So that's when I call in someone to help. And so I sort of meditate on the track, if you like, listen to it a bit and think, well, what kind of voice does it need? And in my head, go through the sort of options of it, almost like sort of trying to synthesize a sound or find an instrument. You sort of think, well, what kind of singer do I need? And it's sort of, you know, male, female, and it's sort of like playing a game of guess who, you know, until you finally get the right person and then ask them. Robert Smith was the first person I thought of with that, and he came up with it straight away. It was brilliant.
Rosie?
When you first started making dance music, it was still a radical anti-establishment kind of genre, and you used that position yourself. Bands like KLF used that position to bring attention to political issues that they cared about. Now that dance, with, you know, looking at the Mercury's, bands like Claxons being on the front of NME, now that dance music is mainstream, is it harder for bands to make statements like that you used to make?
No, any band can make a statement if they want. The bigger the band are, the better the state, you know, the better heard the statement is, really. It's really, that's an individual thing. It's sort of separate to music, I think, and style, you know. People didn't really accept that kind of machine music in the mainstream anyway. It was always confined to, you know, it's disco music, it's for dancing to, or it's experimental sort of weirdness, but never really sort of mainstream. And, you know, so sort of doing that and trying to make a sort of statement really wasn't that clever if you wanted people to listen or pay attention, you know. Making a statement really is down to the individual, whether you want to. I mean, we did it in dance music and we got sort of, not shunned, but that wasn't really the done thing. People don't want to hear political statements on the dance floor, you know, and sort of didn't ever let us quite fit into that kind of Friday night feel-good sort of nightclub scene, which is why we ended up, I suppose, we found our spiritual home and we played Glastonbury. That was really like, ah, we're playing to so many people here, and they're not all dance people. There's so many sort of indie kids here, if you like, for want of a better phrase, and they loved it. And that's when we realised, actually, we're more like a band, but yet we do electronic music and it's sort of dance based, and, you know, we sort of had a foot in two different worlds, if you like.
What do you think of the current state of dance music? Because we've got a lot of, I mean, in our primarily rock-based website and coverage, we've been paying a lot more attention to dance music recently. There's a lot more fusion going on, this idea of a new rave. Do you listen to it much yourself? Does it leave much of an impression on you?
I've just been listening to the, you know, would you call Simian Mobile Disco a new rave band?
I don't think anybody really uses that term. It's just a catch-all, really, and it doesn't really describe anything very well. But I think Simian Mobile Disco would be one of those acts that you would put in this fusion.
Yeah, because the thing is, for me, I've been encapsulated in that world, whether it's gone in or out of fashion. As part of Orbital, it's always, you know, seems like it's the biggest thing in the universe, because it's your life, you know, it's what you're living, and you find with most sort of genres of music, it's alive somewhere, and you just sort of carry on. And dance music's been and gone, come and gone in waves, but this is the first time I felt like this is actually a wave done by people that are so young, they really don't know anything about sort of 15 years ago, they were 3 or 4, mm-hmm. you know, and they weren't around then, you know. So this is a proper, I can hear people, like in the Simian Mobile Disco album, I can hear sort of influences from Todd Terry and things like that, and it's like, well, I don't know how old those guys are, but, you know, you sort of think, God, you know, these people are taking influences from quite a long way, you know, like sort of 1987, they're really going back to that old stuff. And when I listen to Pete Tong on Friday night, it's sort of, you know, that's quite often what Pete plays. It's quite the old guard, you know, all these sort of DJs that have been around for a long time, still doing really sort of high energy fueled club music. But then you also hear this other stuff, and it really does sound like old Chicago acid tracks. And it's really interesting to hear that it's all slowing down again to that sort of groovier 120 BPM, you know. It does sound like it's genuinely quite a fresh revival with lots of fresh ideas, like you say. Do you know what it is? It's not pretentious. Like, a lot of the club scene can be quite pretentious. It has to be a certain type of sound, certain type sort of weight of bass drum and all that, whereas all this sort of new stuff, it tends to be sort of, actually, anything goes. If you can dance to it, that's fine, you know. With the, you know, people like the Claxons, they're much more of a band, but people are dancing to them.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see that wouldn't have happened sort of 15 years ago. People were quite snobbish about their sort of sounds and that kind of thing.
I am Paul McInnes, and you are listening to Music Weekly Redux from Guardian Unlimited. Still to come, Rosie will give us the rundown on this year's Mercury Music Prize nominees. Plus,
I noticed a lot of soul in Black Sabbath records. I could hear, like, influence in Ozzy's vocal from, like, old, like, Negro spiritual hymns.
So that's the soul in Black Sabbath with master rapper Pharo Munch still to come. But first, let's review us some music. Now, we haven't listened to any dongles, remember, singles plus downloads equals dongles for almost a month, and still Rihanna and her Umbrella are at number one. She sold around 300,000 copies of the Ella song, and Bryan Adams is reportedly crying himself to sleep at night at the prospect of losing his number one record. I say reportedly, it's just an image in my head. But while the Guardian's music critic Doreen Linsky wasn't afraid to out himself this week as a supporter of the Bachan One, we're saying it's time for a change. One of us here in the pods had 14 top 40 singles in his career, and it isn't Benjamino Del Greeno. So Mr. Hartnell ought to be able to distinguish the good from the bad in this crop. We'll start with Groove Armada and Song from Mucha, or Mattia, if you prefer. That's one of those dongles what's already in the charts by the time we're reviewing it, but it only comes out physically this week. It's not only a song for ex-Sugar Babe Mucha Buena, it features her. It's a song with tune about getting over heartbreak but keeping on bumping into that old bloke of yours. Rosie Swash, what do you make of it?
Well, last time I reviewed Mucha, or Mattia, as she calls herself then, on the podcast, it was for Real Girl, and I don't think I was particularly complimentary about
that. I don't think you were either.
And I think what I really like about this song, and you said it yourself, a lot of people are saying, is this is the kind of thing we want her to be making and we thought she would be making. I've heard rumours that she wasn't really that happy with the result, and she doesn't, you know, she doesn't consider it part of the image she wants to present, but I think it's fantastic. And one of the things I like, and I think this is probably what Groove Armada bring in terms of the production side, is like there's just that little touch of she kicks off the first verse with speaking and then singing, and then she switches it around, sings and speaks in the second verse, and it's little touches like that that keep pop music interesting.
Paul, your feelings?
I think this latest Groove Armada record is pretty good. I mean, I think it's the best one I've heard from them, actually. Everything I've heard so far has been pretty on fire, really. Mm-hmm. Really sort of hot sounding, really club. You know, it's just got a really solid kind of sound. And that one is the same. That wouldn't be my favourite one that I've heard. It's infuriatingly catchy, so it's certainly good on that level. But, you know, some of the other stuff I've heard I would prefer, but that's just personal taste. But that sounds good.
Ben?
I'm not a big fan of kind of this self-aggrandizement or aggrandizement.
Mattia Mucha, let's call the whole thing off.
Exactly. Gwen Stefani does it, Fergie does it, sing about themselves. I think you can have more ideas than that, so I'm not a big fan of the title, but a very catchy summary song.
But it's a song for Mattia, it's a gift on the
part
of
But it would have been even better, therefore, if she didn't sing it.
Well, maybe. Although she might be going, why are they making this song about me and not asking me to sing? Anyway, I mean, I think you know, it just confirms that this summer it's the return of the late 90s, the late 90s Big Beat Merchants, and because the Chemical Brothers just released a bit of a stormer of an album as well, so more power to them all. Okay, next up, it's a genre we don't do nearly enough of on Music Weekly. Yes, it's Icelandic pump pop. This is, I'm going to have to take a minute here, Jakobinarina, and this is an advertisement. So they are an Icelandic six-piece signed to Parlophone. Their MySpace page lists influences as broad as Wu-Tang, Suicide and Justin Timberlake. And they are in London this week. If you are around, you should maybe check them out. To me, it sounds like they've kind of put Shane McGowan in some kind of cryogenic suspension and carted him over the other side of Europe. But, Paul, I know you've only heard a brief snatch of it there. Any impressions?
Do you know what? It just sounds like something from John Peel in the 80s. Yeah. Really, you know. But I quite, you know, I liked John Peel in the 80s, so that's not a bad thing. Yeah, I'd be interested to hear more from them. See if, you know, it sounds like it was sort of going for a bit of a quirky twist there, you know.
Well, I think Rosie can certainly fill us in on their twist.
They are, I think, one of the things I think about them is the popularity of emo bands who trade on just these meaningless emotions that they stir up in people. Well, this is actually a band with something to say. And they're very angry for such young men, and they're only about 16 or 17, and they have a habit of kicking off their songs with like their announcements. Like one of their songs starts off, "Hello, you are all going to die," and it's like they just have this, you know, that song's all
it's
about
cheery
not telling her. But it's like they just always they want to kick people's thoughts into action, and they want to shout and shake and people and tell them to wake up. So I quite like that. It's Jacobinarina.
Jacobinarina. I can tell you from personal experience that young men quite often tend to be angry. But, here's a chilled out one, Ben Green.
I've been to Iceland and it didn't sound anything like that. it does nothing for me. I think it sounds like a comedy German song, but you know, that little 20 seconds snippet or so probably doesn't do it a great deal of justice, and it's just it's not my kind of thing.
It's not Ben's kind of thing. But for our final selection this week, this is the return of the mighty Karen O and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. This is Rockers to Swallow. Well, that is Rockers to Swallow, the first track on the Is EP, which is new in the shops, but not necessarily new in itself because it's a collection of unreleased tracks. They describe it themselves as bad, suggestive and wrong. Ben, you're usually a sucker for a glamorous front woman. What do you make of the Yeah Yeah Yeahs?
Well, I definitely think that Karen O is one of the most interesting female or male front people in music today. And I do like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. I really like Gold Lion. That song we just heard there doesn't do a great deal else from that little snippet that we heard. But within that, you know, the kind of the guttural emotion, I really like the chugging guitars. I think it's pretty cool.
Paul, you ever been caught hanging out on the New York art punk scene?
Not knowingly. No, it could have happened.
Could have been, there was that missing weekend.
Yeah, there was that time. It sounds all right to me. I'd sort of like to hear that loud in my car. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I do quite like that kind of grungy rock. You know, PJ Harvey is my sort of favourite in that kind of world. Doesn't sound quite up to that standard to me. You know, it sounded like it wanted to really kick off. So I'd be disappointed if it didn't. And you were saying that it doesn't. So that would disappoint me. But you know, it's a good sound. It's a sort of mighty kind of sound.
Yeah, but not making any concessions necessarily to kind of your traditional pop song form. Rosie Swash.
I've never been that bothered with the Yeah Yeahs. I think they're all a little bit conveniently cool for me. But this, I think, goes to show that more people should release 5-track EPs as opposed to albums with a load of padding on them.
Interesting. New direction for the record industry, as proposed by one Rosie Swash.
Yeah.
Now, shortlist. 2007 Mercury Music Prize announced earlier this week. I was there. Not very exciting. Lots of dry ice and cynical hacks, and even more cynical paparazzi who just kept on hurling abuse at all the actors that came on. But you couldn't hear that because it wasn't really live on telly. Now, the prize is, of course, given to the best British or Irish album of the last 12 months. It claims to be sponsored by Nationwide, but Rosie said she detected the sweaty hand of the NME in the selection process. Before she tells us why, here's the sound of some of the artists who could be picking up a cheque for 20 grand.
I can tell what you can say. Chocolate-flavoured love theme. Treat that treats you so mean. Covering your nights and days. I replace your tears. And when your dreams are wet, I still have a train. Act as long as I'm on the show. Got to pull funny to his friend. You're the one who went back to what you know. Flicking through a little book of sex.
to make an artificial light shine. Leave go my golden eye.
Come and spin around. So get yourself together. You're jumping back on the ground.
Okay, that's the Klaxons finishing us off there with a montage which includes two of the three nominated acts that we have had on this podcast. That's a 25% hit rate, Rosie Swash. Something to be proud of, no?
Yes, very much so. Shall I run through the list of who's
on there?
Yeah,
just give us the full list of who's been nominated.
We've got Bat for Lashes, been on our show. Fionn Regan, New Young Pony Club, been on our show. Klaxons, The Young Knives, Arctic Monkeys, Maps, been on our show. The View, Dizzy Rascal, Amy Winehouse, Jamie T and Seb Rochford.
Good list reading skills. So tell us about it.
What's your conclusion? People genuinely do get a bit more excited about the Mercury Award than say the Brits or something, because there is this idea that exists that it represents the quality of music alone and doesn't reward people for longevity or commercial success or anything like that. This year's awards were just a bit puzzling. Everyone was sort of like, what? There's several bands and artists who I think I would have put money on. I can't believe Jarvis isn't on there, Jarvis Cocker with his album. I can't believe The Aliens aren't on there. And then the fact that The View are on there, it seems like it reflects a very narrow kind of taste.
But also kind of, I think there's something about novelty about it, which is what I wonder whether it's an anti-longevity thing about Jarvis, that they're not going to have him on because he's so well-known and kind of established, and they'd rather stick somebody like The View in his debut album and they proved popular, or somebody like Maps, who, to be fair, came onto that shortlist from under the radar, really. He hadn't been getting totally rave reviews.
Yeah, I think a lot of people
coverage.
Thought it was going to be the Cherry Ghost was going to fill that kind of that space. You know, despite that, it still feels a bit stale because there are two previous winners on there, Dizzy Rascal and Arctic Monkeys. So it doesn't, it's just like a sort of sense of deja vu on there. But the blog that went up obviously got quite a lot of people's backs up. And Vitus303 said, "The nominations tell you nothing about the state of British music whatsoever. If you want to know how good the British music scene is, then go to lots of gigs and buy lots of records, listen to them, then ponder how pleasurable the experience was."
So, which, of course, the judging panel didn't do
at all. They just looked at the artwork. But what that made me think of was the fact that a lot of the buzz bands of the last few months, like, say, Cajun Dance Party, who people are getting excited about and you're seeing all over the place, haven't released albums yet.
Yeah.
So there does seem to be a bit of a space there where there wasn't anything.
Paul, just to bring you into this little discussion, do you think that a kind of a prize like the Mercury has a responsibility to kind of take in as broad a range of music as possible, or do you think it should just be rewarding what the judges perceive to be the best?
No, I think it should be broad. But obviously, if you're a judge, you've got to pick what you think is the best. That's the only criteria you've got, isn't it?
Yeah. I suppose in recent years, there appears to have been a kind of, well, we'll have a folk one, we'll have a dance one, we'll have a jazz one. Whereas it's almost all indie this year.
Yeah, I know. I know what you mean. That I quite enjoyed that aspect. And if they did judge it like that, you know, sort of roughly think, well, let's all have a day listening to the folk stuff. You know, I think that's good to do that because it does turn you on to stuff you wouldn't think to listen to. Whereas this isn't going to turn me on to anything I don't hear on Radio 1, pretty much.
Yeah.
Apart from, you know, Maps. Funnily enough, I just ordered that album today. I had a quick listen, you know, and thought, oh, that sounds good. I've been hearing that it's good. I know it's, you know,
as a result of the nomination.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it was, yeah, yeah, because it came up on iTunes. I thought, oh, yeah, I know, but I knew Daniel Miller had signed it to Mute, and, you know, he's a good picker. So I keep meaning to check them out, or check him out. And it sounded like sounds like a good album. Bat for Lashes, for me, is the clear winner. If Bat for Lashes doesn't win the Mercury Prize, then, you know, there's no justice. It's a really unusual album. It's sort of really sort of quite homemade sounding. It's just full of songs. It is, you know.
I think my wife started listening to it about 6 months after she got it, and she hadn't really listened to it before. And then she just started listening to it all the time. And so it was one of those things where it got a bit of a puff when it came out and people listened to it and then they put it down. I think there's something really that's got a real longevity about it. And I think if she was to win, which I worry she might not, I've got a horrible feeling it'll be Lil Winehouse. But if she were to win it, I think she would bock that curse, you know, the old curse of the Mercury Prize. Rock and roll, hip hop, music, a disco, D.O. to Atlanta, Frisco. New Frisco, yeah, with a new twist so that y'all can get a gist of the rhyme I do not miss. I will not fail. Please take a glimpse of the time at your own risk. I will not fail. Fuck your boys, the man, the plot, the plan, and the fiends and the fans on the block. Team, scheme. Well, that track was Body Baby by Pharoah Monch. His real name's Troy Donald Jameson, though. And he's perhaps one of the most credible rappers left in the business. And while he certainly doesn't sell 50 cent size units, he's still got a record deal, which is more than most, I suppose, backpacky rappers have. And he's just released his third solo album, which not only has live instrumentation, but a Public Enemy cover too. We caught up with The Monch, and he told us about his new sound.
This album actually goes further back in my history than Internal Affairs and revisits a lot of my what I went through musically in my upbringing. You know, my father was listening to quartet gospel, my mother was listening to Tom Jones, my sister was listening to the Jackson 5 in the room next to me, my oldest brother was in the basement listening to Sabbath and Led Zeppelin. So I was just smashed over the head with a whole bunch of music, and I loved all the music, particularly in my teenage years and in my 20s, really got into rock real heavily. So even in rock, I noticed a lot of soul in the Black Sabbath records. Even though they were dark, I could hear like an influence in Ozzy's vocal from like old, like Negro spiritual hymns, the way he would sing it. His voice kind of disguised it, but the way he would sing it reminded me of some of those types of hymns. And Led Zeppelin, you know, it's my favorite group of all time. They obviously had a blues funk, almost like a hip-hop type of timing. So I just really wanted to implement all of those things in this album.
So, that was Pharoah Monch. And that new album he was talking about is called Desire. I really love it. And I would say it's one of the best things around at the moment, certainly in that urban hip-hop area. So go out and get it. Our pod is soon going to turn back into a pumpkin. But before it does, let's go back to our special guest this week, Paul Hartnell. Paul, you are headlining The Big Chill. It's coming up.
That's right.
Soon. You're looking forward to that, I presume.
I am indeed, yeah. You know, it's been a while. So I've missed playing live over the last sort of 3 years. I never really thought about it. You know, it's just something that's been so integral to my life over the past sort of 15 or so years with Orbital, and then it's, all of a sudden it stopped, you know. So I'm really looking forward to getting back out there playing live, and, you know, maybe after this sort of short run of gigs that I've got, doing a few festivals and things, just getting touring again. Yeah. And that kind of thing.
Because obviously part of the great Orbital experience, I saw you at Tribal Gathering back in, I think it was 1995 or something, was the show as well as the music. And how much of are you putting a lot of consideration thought into that this time around?
Well, funnily enough, no. Again, you know, by want of wanting a change, I've gone completely the other way. There's 9 of us on stage,
right?
So that's essentially the show.
Yeah,
you know, I've got a friend of mine and some of them are sort of readers, you know, so they're going to need to see their sheet music. So we're going to sort of go for more theatrical, sort of moody lighting, nine musicians on stage, and then see where it goes. That's all we've got planned. No video whatsoever for this run of shows. Whether that might creep in as time goes, you know, it's like when I first started Orbital, we had no video, and it started with a slide projector and then built up, you know. And yeah, this may do the same, but it's an organic process playing live. It's sort of hard to try and work out how it's gonna look until you sort of started doing it, and things start adding and building up as you go along, really. That tends to be the way I've always worked, anyway.
The breaking up of Orbital, I mean, you were so big, you were so popular, you had such a fan base, huge fan base, that, you know, both bought your records and also equally went to see you live. Was it not the case that you could have, I mean, you could have become the electronic Rolling Stones and kind of, you know, kept this, taking this audience with you for decades? What was it that made you decide to kind of put that aside?
Yeah, damn, when you put it like that.
Yeah.
But no, it was just a creative decision. I just felt like if we'd have carried on going, it would have been a bit like sort of rewriting the last page of a book over and over again. We'd had this great thing. It was really good fun, but it was time to say, well, you know, it's finished. It's time to move on and do something new, try something else. Me and Phil have both done that, you know, and hopefully all those Orbital fans will sort of come and see me play and go and see Phil play, you know. But we'll see.
Could we pencil you in for a reunion in 2015?
Oh, you never know.
Yeah, you never do. Well, That is it for this week's Music Weekly. If you can't kick the habit, then head to the blog to discuss the golden days of techno, new rave, the Mercurys, the Monch. Or if that's too public, you can email us in secret at music.editor@guardianunlimited.co.uk. We're back next week with our ode to almost all things Canadian. Yes, it's our Canadian music special featuring Feist, Chromeo, we've got a bit of Broken Social Scene, Stars, Emily Haynes, and although she hasn't agreed 100% yet, we're still hopeful of Celine Dion. Have your Moose and Molson's ready then. But for now, thanks to Rosie Swash and again to our very special guest Paul Hartnell. His new album Ideal Condition is out now and he will be headlining the Big Chill Festival on Sunday, August the 5th. Music Weekly is produced by Ben Green, I am Paul McInnes, and this is Patchwork Guilt by Paul Hartnell. See you next time. Unlimited.